This is Barry from Watford, and you are listening to Joe at the Fringe. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Simon Clancy. Welcome to the final Joe at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I'm here, as always, with Noz Chowdhury.
Hello.
It is, much like yesterday's episode, early in the morning. It is around about 3:20 a.m. because we just arrived back from the Daniel Kitson show, our final show here at Edinburgh. And what a show to finish with. We shall discuss that later on. We'll have a quick run through of the things that we saw yesterday and the things that we loved. And then we will give you our top fives, things that we saw whilst we were here. Our hearty recommendations, as it were. Don't forget, you can go to joe.co.uk, which is where you'll find a lot of reviews, a lot of features. We've got articles written by Alex Edelman. We've got video features from Adam Rowe. And then Noz and I have been writing up our favourite comedians, our favourite things that we've seen. You'll be able to have a read through those as well. This is not the only comedic thing that we do at Joe. Boys Don't Cry, which is with Russell Kane, which has a comedy element to it, although there's a very serious element to it as well. Is a podcast that you can download from all your favourite stores, as it were. And Unfiltered with James O'Brien is an excellent audio offering. You can get all of that, and hopefully we'll be bringing you more comedy as we move along through the year. So, I know yesterday we said, let's talk about very briefly some highlights, and then you did a sort of 20-minute sort of piece. But highlights from yesterday, or today, depending on how you want to look at it, which was essentially our final day here.
Obviously, we've just been to see Daniel Kitson, but I suppose we'll get onto that later.
Your voice sounds very husky.
Considering I've got quite a high voice, high-pitched voice, usually this is a nice change. I almost sound like a regular man.
Yeah.
The first thing that really stood out was Jen Brister. She was talking about her mum living with her and sort of all the sort of stress that entails, and also sort of bringing up her twin boys in modern life. And basically she was such a sort of powerful presence on stage. I think she's got like a little bit of a... I think she's often described as sort of being sort of quite angry, and I think that's probably unfair because like she's so good at sort of displaying sort of frustration and anger and everything on stage, but it's all very compartmentalised, and then she'll go into a rage and then all of a sudden she'll be calm again. It's that sort of just juxtaposition is really funny. So she was amazing. Went to see Ola the Comedian. He's written a piece for us about how... Christianity feeds into his comedy, and his show is actually based around a church service. That's the sort of like atmosphere and structure he gives it, and he invites sort of like guests on to debate things and do like routines and stuff. And I loved that. I loved the atmosphere, and also I loved the fact that he's so generous with his guests. It's obviously he does his element and his jokes, but then he really invites the sort of guests to sort of like showcase their talent, and I thought that was really cool. And I finally got to see Alex Edelman that you'd seen.
I came in with you actually to see it again, so yeah. It's intriguing. We'll sit and discuss now kind of how it worked for both of us.
Yeah, and I mean he
because it's fucking good.
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, essentially what it's about is he visits a white nationalist meeting in America, obviously as a Jewish comedian, but doesn't make that apparent straight away. And the thing is that the show is really sort of thought-provoking, really funny. But I suppose, like, if you were massively cynical, you kind of think, oh, did that really happen? Or, like, you could do that about any sort of show. But, like, I mean, first of all, it is pretty apparent that it's very, very real just because the detail he goes into and how it affected him and what he found funny and what he found hurtful. But also I'm really glad that he did a piece for us about it, about what he learned. And that was great colour for his show, because his show is obviously funny with sort of like poignant bits and serious bits, but his article was more about sort of what he actually learned and the little details that they disclosed to each other that isn't supposed to be privy to the rest of us. And for instance, the fact that they have a code where they don't call Jewish people Jews or anything because they'll get found out. So they have the code term Skypes, which presumably is harder to detect because of the sort of communication platform, but stuff like that. And on the one hand, it's amazing and funny, and you love the fact that he's getting one over on them, and the ending is sort of beautifully It's a beautiful sort of like fuck you to them. Like
it's the best ending.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful fuck you, but like in a sort of brilliantly petty way that works really, really well. But there's also like an undercurrent of sort of like all the way through you laughing and everything, but you're thinking, fuck, these people exist, and as ridiculous as they are, they're emboldened and they feel that they're on a mission, and the end outcome of their mission, as far as they're concerned, is to eradicate...
it's the elimination of Jews, isn't it? People of colour and...
Yeah, you know, anyone...
Non-pure white.
Yeah, anyone who isn't their definition of a... of the right race and religion, and it's chilling in that respect. But if you are going to tackle important subjects in comedy, he just does it beautifully, and also not in a an overly worthy way or an overly preachy way. He just does it with comedy, but also it sort of lingers with you and the sort of the bigger point sort of remains with you afterwards. And also, I think comedy can do, and I think what it does in this example is, if you're not Jewish and you go to see the show, for a short moment, it gives you a bit of a realisation about how fucking shit it is when there's so much anti-Semitism about.
There is a moment where that resonates most, and it involves a girl, a neo-Nazi, let's call them what they are, called Chelsea, who approaches him at the end of this meeting, and that really is a kind of a bit of a kicker. And you can see that Alex gets quite emotional, I think, telling that particular... What I love about it, and if you've never been to the Edinburgh Festival, but you've been to comedy shows, let's say you've been to the Comedy Store or your local comedy club in the town that you live in, you may see a set of 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes of, you know, just jokes with no connection. What you get here at the Fringe is very much shows that are connected right the way through. You know, it's a story that these people are telling you, and they will veer off and down a few different rabbit holes, a few different alleys, but ultimately they stick to the script, they stick to the story, and they are telling you a tale through the 55, 60 minutes that they are on stage. That narrative is stronger in his show than anywhere else. The storytelling is so intricately connected. But he will disappear to lots of different things. He talks about Stephen Fry. He talks about Coco the gorilla. He talks about his brother being in the Olympics, in the Winter Olympics. But they're all seamlessly threaded back, aren't they, to the main story. And it's done with such recall, and almost as if they are part of that night where he went to that block of flats in Brooklyn for that meeting. It's just so well done. I know he's won the Perrier Award, which is the award. It's not called the Perrier anymore, but it will always be in our heads. He has won the award back in 2014. There's not been a double winner of the Perrier, but that was the best show that I've seen, with a caveat that we will get to later on. But yeah, that was just a magic show. I think I enjoyed it more the second time around than I did the first time around, which is weird. But if he's touring it, go and see it, because it is absolutely wonderful.
When you say it's a magic show, it's
not a magic show.
Yeah, there's no tricks. It's not like he sort of... So as a Nazi in half or anything. Which,
well, I mean, that would have been maybe a better show.
Yeah.
That's magic.
Yeah. And then I also went to see a play. See,
ooh, Captain Highbrow.
Yeah, I can be cultured. I can be BBC 4. It was a play called I'll Have What She's Having, and it was recommended by a guy who works with us called Rich Cooper, and it was...
producer of Unfiltered.
Yeah, and a stand-up guy. And,
not actually a stand-up guy, not a comedian.
Yeah.
Just a good fella.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really...
That's magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. It was a two-woman show, and basically it was looking at sort of how external expectations can sort of weigh on you in terms of your self-respect and your sort of how you feel that you're doing in life, and whether you feel like you're a success or a failure compared to other people. And it was really cleverly done. There were so many sort of moving parts. To have the sort of ability to do all that, and also the sort of two performers wrote it as well, it was really, really impressive.
A couple of quick fire things just to rattle through. I just want to talk about themes that we've seen here. I want to talk about stuff that we, you know, our top fives. It is coming up to, I feel like, John Humphreys on the Today programme, just less. No, I won't go there. But it is coming out to 3:30 in the morning. So themes, a lot of Me Too, a lot of toxic masculinity, a lot of racism. Do you think that there was too much of it?
No, I don't think there was. I think when you talk about themes, it almost sort of puts an artificial sort of thought in your head that it's almost like everyone got together and thought, right, what should we all discuss this year? And obviously it's not like that. What happens is everyone's working on their own shows and what people are living through, it automatically feeds into what people are doing shows on. So I think it's absolutely fine. I think the biggest thing is whatever people are discussing, whether it's thought-provoking and funny, it's about whether the subject, whatever it is, has been performed in an effective way.
Do you think comedians have a responsibility to reflect what's happening in society?
I don't think they do, and a lot of some of the comedians that we've been to see haven't even sort of touched on particular sort of worthy topics or big grand narratives. But I think when comedians do it, that's really cool. But I definitely don't think there's any kind of responsibility to do that. But if a comedian wants to do that and feed that into what they're doing in terms of their comedy, I think it's such an effective medium to get the point across. And because the thing is, there's certain universals that can sort of breach the lines that sort of are between us as people. Football can break down barriers, music and comedy, I think. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter if you dislike a particular kind of person or sort of are anti whatever. If comedy is done well, it can really get a point through. It can almost slide in underneath the jokes, almost like you don't always realise, and I think that's powerful.
Speaking of football, Alex Edelman's a Liverpool fan. That's some barriers breaking down, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's
that wasn't the response I was expecting from you. I was expecting you to go all...
It's ironic that sort of he's done a show where you totally you totally see things from his side and you understand what it's like for him to be irrationally hated for something he is. And that's totally unfair and totally wrong. But as soon as you said that, I immediately disliked him for being a Liverpool fan.
One of my highlights yesterday, Sarah Barron, New York stand-up. Just an outstanding, outstanding show in the Tron. Just a terrific, caustic attack on sort of men generally, I suppose, her husband specifically, her newborn child. But it was just a brilliant, brilliant show. And there was this section, about a 10-minute section, where it turned out that she'd written sort of sexual, well, essentially pornography when she was 13, but she didn't know the right words and she didn't really know any of the... So she thought orgasms were we, you just had a we. And she misspelt a few key words involving, you know, penis, vagina. They were just spelt incorrectly or they were given different words. And she talked about this and people laughed. And then she said, oh, I've got a copy here. And she pulled out the original copy and then gave it to somebody in the audience who then had to read. It was just brilliant. 10 minutes of... It was just so well done, so clever. The way she set it up and the way she talked the audience member through what would have been clearly pretty embarrassing to read out. But to be fair to the guy, he absolutely nailed it and just added to the kind of the overall brilliance of this set piece. It was a terrific hour of comedy. I suppose the highlight for us and the best thing that we did in a way was the very last show of the, I think, 65 shows that we've seen between us over the 5 days. Probably our favourite comedian in Daniel Kitson, who won the Perrier here in 2002. Character comedian, a lot of theatre shows. I don't know if you saw his play Tree, which toured the UK, started off at the Royal Exchange in Manchester, which was just an absolutely phenomenal set piece. He is a genius, isn't he? He is and it's difficult, I suppose. We talked about this on the walk back an hour or so ago. It is hard to quantify what makes him so good, and yet his observations and his... just the things that he comes up with are astonishing in his ability to just... Because he's a very... If you've never seen him, Daniel's a very unusual-looking guy. He's kind of bald with a big beard and glasses. He's 41. He's sort of slightly rotund. I mean, he's a national... We called him a national treasure, didn't we? I said to you, he's a national treasure. Yet, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have no idea who he is. But his show, an hour and a half, we confirmed the rumours. It started at midnight. It was magic.
No, it was just amazing. It's just an amazing way to end, sort of, for that to be like the last show that we see before we head off. It was just a great ending, and it's funny because it had a really cool atmosphere, and because of the time it was done, and because it sort of went on for an hour and a half, it almost had the atmosphere of like a lock-in, like in a pub. And
the expectation beforehand was huge. There was a lot of comedians there. Nish Kumar was there. Russell Howard was there. There was a lot of, just a sense that you were about to see something, you know, wonderful. And all he did, all the show was about, was the ephemera that was in his house. So he just had a list of stuff, two typewriters, I've got a photo of this, I've got a... And then all of a sudden he'd just say something, a badge that was given to me by a girlfriend when I was 19. And then he'd just go off talking about this. And then he'd go off on, there'd be tentacles to that. And then he'd pull it all the way back. And We talk about Alex Edelman being right up there, and we'll go through our best shows in a sec, but this was the best show I saw by a comfortable margin, and yet it's difficult to quantify it being in the same mix as everything else. And I'm not sure how I can quantify why I think that, but it just is.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, again, like the whole premise was, well, part of the premise of us being here is to sort of watch shows and tell people what's great and what they should go and see. And we sort of do our best in trying to sort of relate why we personally enjoyed them. But the thing with Daniel Kitson is it's so hard to describe. It's personally, I kind of feel like I'm not qualified enough to sort of explain exactly why it's so funny and it works so well. And like loads of people like describe Daniel Kitson as like a genius and the best comedian out there. And he's like the comedian's comedian. And quite often with stuff like that, it can be like a self-fulfilling prophecy that because everyone says it's great, people will watch it and they'll just basically agree, say it is great without realising or without actually thinking it is great. But he's very much an exception to that. It was, and again, like a lot of what he did, if anyone else delivered exactly the same, because it's not, a lot of it's not even material. It's such a loose show and it's just basically the very sort of loose sort of structure was like him literally reading off a list of what's around his house. And then he'd allow it to just go off into different sort of tangents. And it's almost like showing off to like say, I know I'm so funny.
But it's not lazy either, is it?
No, it's not lazy and it's not sort of conceited. But it's literally like I can reel off a list of what's in my house and I can somehow make that hilarious. And like on occasions, like poignant and sad and sort of philosophical in a way, so but not in a sort of try hard kind of like, oh, I'm gonna be all worthy. He was just brilliant. And like even like somebody will sort of get up to stretch and like he'll zone in on that, like, and again not in a nasty way, but sort of like just take the piss out of that.
It's the most simple show in its very nexus. It's the most simple show I think I've seen, simple, and yet it must have taken months and months to construct, because not only is it an hour and a half, it's not just a load of stories about ephemera in his house. There is a connection. He brings it all back at the, you know, at the end. It's just a wonderful show. Right, it's getting close to 3:30 in the morning. I'm going to bed in a sec. Give us your top five things. I know you're going to struggle to give them in an order. I will give them in an order, dear listener, but I don't think Noz is going to be able to do that. So,
do you want to go first?
So I will say,
and I'll basically just copy you.
So the fifth best thing I saw at the Edinburgh Fringe would be Sarah Baron. The fourth best thing I saw is going to be Brennan Rees. The third best thing will be Coach, Coach 2, Coach Harder. The second best show that I saw was Alex Edelman, and the best show was Daniel Kitson's show from last night, or this morning, however you want to play it. Your top five?
I find this massively hard, because like Adam Rowe was amazing, Justin Morehouse was amazing. I don't feel I can include Daniel Kitson because, like, it's just that was obviously
chicken. That
would obviously be the best. Like, even if he was, I mean, I was going to say even if he was reading out a shopping list, but he was actually reading out stuff that's in his house, so it's not dissimilar. So, the five I'm going to pick, just for sort of personal reasons, was Susie Ruffle was amazing. Then Brennan Rees, that was funny and beautiful and heartbreaking and amazing. Kerry Pritchard-McLean, again, just a force of nature, just so enjoyable to watch. Alex Edelman, for the reasons that we've discussed in this pod, and Ahir Shah. You almost think it's dangerous for someone to have that much intellect and sort of so many sort of thoughts buzzing around his head, but he turns it all into a really sort of moving and clever show.
Very quickly, takeaways from the Fringe. It's been a phenomenal few days, hasn't it? There's so much talent up here. It's absolutely rammed. There's a reason why it's the world's biggest arts festival. And lots for us at Joe to look forward to in terms of connections that we've made, things that we've seen, and people that are going to be working with us across a number of different platforms, a number of different forums.
First of all, my already high level of respect for comedians has sort of gone through the roof, just because seeing them work, seeing how hard it is, seeing how hard they have to work at certain times of the day, how they have to do their own promotion and send out flyers, how they have to perform in front of two, three people and still you have the same energy and commitment that they would if it was 300 people. There's the fact that one of the themes that I've, one of the things I found is female comedians sort of have absolutely killed it as far as I'm concerned for the shows I've seen. I've seen loads of sort of really good, funny, talented men, but like the women are the ones that have really stood out. And
you're so PC.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't really give a shit if anyone thinks I'm being PC because I'm not. But what I do give a shit about is I don't want to come across in any way as like this bloke that's being fucking patronising to women and sort of saying, oh, the women have done really well. Go women. Do you know what I mean? I'm a male feminist and all that bullshit. Do you know what I mean? Like it's honestly because a lot of shows by women have just been incredible and inventive. And like the whole thing about sort of women and sort of representation and also people who have a disability or sort of people of colour or trans people or whatever, part of the reason why that's so important, it isn't just because it's the right thing to do and it's the right thing to give people a voice, but also from the punter's point of view, it's such a positive thing in terms of hearing new voices and getting a different kind of comedy, and it sort of enriches comedy as a whole. So that's been great. And also, a few of the women that I've seen have talked about what it's like growing up and some of them what it's like growing up being gay and how difficult that is and how it's difficult to reconcile that at a young age, and also how it shouldn't be like that and it's wrong that it's like that, and some of them are angry that it's like that. And as somebody who sort of not had that experience, it was really educational for me to sort of get a little bit of an inkling of what that might be like. So that was great. But just in general, like none of the issues that I went to see were heavy handed. I didn't feel like, you talk about Me Too, you talk about anything to do with race or sexism. None of it felt as if it was layered on for effects. It was all interwoven and it all worked really well.
Take us to church, Nos Chowdhury. Thanks for listening. We've had 5 excellent days here, 5 really fun podcasts. Hope you were able to enjoy them. Hope you got to see some stuff either now or when these guys tour their wares around the country. We are now off to bed, as you can tell by Noz is probably going to need to calm down a little bit after that speech. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, you can check out all of our stuff, our reviews, our features at joe.co.uk. Stick with us over the coming months. There will be more comedy, I'm sure, to come from us. And yeah, we're off to bed. Thanks very much indeed.
See you forever.
Weirdo.